Okay, is everybody back?
Yeah.
Okay, so sorry to interrupt, Jason. So why don't you go on and we're talking about the Wisconsin Initiative in Climate Change.
Yes, and the initiative, they just had OSU Extension, Ohio Extension, had a call on today, just a conference call that was speaking a little bit about that initiative and kind of the successes they've had over the last 4 years. And I would recommend looking at it because I know from an Ohio perspective, I think it's something that's replicable. It started as kind of, I think some different legislators coming together asking what the impact of climate change was to try to speak to their stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
And I was rather impressed with what they were able to accomplish really from the bottom up. And I think we were just talking about how some of the funding became challenging towards the end, but I think the structure of it is such that they can still accomplish a lot, even with limited resources, and at least it got a lot of different groups speaking to one another. Where there was
the fishermen, and they got the skiers, and it really was a far-flung effort, and it had something to say for everyone. I was also very impressed with their work.
Yeah.
It might be a group that we might have a give a talk on the Clean Network call at some point.
Sure. Yeah, I just forwarded the info on the webinar to the listserv.
All right. Okay, thanks. Okay, so that was our first announcement. Are there other announcements? I can do one. I said it in the email, but I want to just say a little bit about what we're planning for the next few weeks. I don't know, a lot of you might have been on the phone a few months ago when we had a conversation about using social media and getting information out and receiving information. And I asked a question about how many people on the call had actually effectively felt like they were effectively using social media in their work, and there was dead silence on the phone. And so we decided, well, maybe it's a good idea to have a series of sessions where we talk about using social media. And so next week will be the first of three sessions, and we're going to structure this such that the first week, next Tuesday, we will have a conversation about more of a presentation about how individuals can use social media, both to receive and to disseminate information. And then at the end of that, we'll sort of make suggestions for people for a few things that people might try that they haven't tried before. And then the second session will be 2 weeks later on May 21st. And in that session, we'll hear from various different groups, and those of you who will participate can also kind of pipe in into how organizations and high-level individuals and organizations can effectively use social media. And that's all to set the platform for the last session, which would be on May 28th, in which we will have a conversation about how Clean should use social media more effectively. We'll say a little bit about what we've been doing so far, but wanting to see how we might be more effective. So anyway, and once we have the agendas a little bit more finalized and up on the webpage, I will actually advertise these three sessions a little bit more broadly than just our listserv. But I want everybody to know, and hopefully people will call in and we can have others call in.
Every Tuesday morning.
Are there other announcements?
And I haven't listened to it for a few months. And they're just sort of updating what.
Okay. Let's see what else. Everybody knows we got the AGU sessions are in, and we'll hear in June as to whether those were accepted or not. We do have a couple of climate literacy sessions that have been accepted for GSA, that's the Geological Society of America meeting, which will be in October. And so there'll be two sessions, one that has a focus on formal and informal education and outreach activities, and a second one that focuses on evaluation and research on these topics. And so if there's those of you, we're trying to identify, we'll be advertising these sessions for people to submit abstracts. So if you're think you might be going to the GSA meeting, let me know, because we can use help, I think, in trying to attract proposals. Okay, are there any other announcements?
I'll get back to you about the, this is Martha, I'll get back to you about the social media. I'm sorry, I just went into a conference for 4 days and I couldn't even get on my email. I had to focus, so now I'm going into the Fortune. I'm driving into Fortune Magazine's Brainstorm Green, and there is a climate session this morning. I'm out in Laguna.
Yeah?
So I've just been really busy, but I'm going to get back to you about the social media.
Okay, very good. Thanks. All right, well, I know that Caroline has something that she wants to share with us. So, Caroline, I'll let you describe the work that you've been doing and ask the questions you'd like to get input on.
Thanks, Tamara. And for everyone, this by no means my email that went out. I might be in need of just a little therapy session with you all, but I am, you know, so cognizant of the intense work that has happened since my eyes got knee-deep in the climate change. And for the past 3 years, what I have seen is there are even more wheels turning, and they're turning faster in terms of trying to educate and engage on climate and energy. So the effort, to me, has been intense and scaling at a wonderful level. And the impacts and successes have been definitely visible, as in the Wisconsin good news we heard earlier today. And I could also say some of it is happening with our regional climate action plan here in the southeast of Florida, with four major counties really pulling together. I'm also want to go on record as saying that we have never been in more demand as the CLIO Institute and our work in bridging the divide between science and society and getting this conversation amplified. And we're bringing lots of people. Everybody wants to play, so there's tremendous interest. So I'm just getting the caveat out that we have a lot of good people doing some very great things. My big concern is the collective impact and the planetary boundary type of science numbers that are coming out of these worst-case scenarios or middle-to-worst-case scenarios really call for much more, much faster. And I'm wrestling with it because I'm being pulled onto a national stage on a few venues and don't want to be used. I want to make sure that I don't know. This was my third, next month will be my third trip back out to D.C. for some climate resilient championship nonsense or recognition or summit. And they're not nonsense. They're great. But I see them as vehicles to really push the envelope, and I've been visiting congressmen and senators when I go. And I wonder, you know, one of my board members is a retired county commissioner. And she has stood up with us in our climate training sessions and so on and really said it how I feel it, that climate change is a political issue. It is not a partisan issue, and that we need to do that. And I've been giving the microphone to every Republican who gets it, and I think that there is so much truth to the fact that every Republican is included out and every Democrat is included in. My frustration is, are we really talking about approving this Keystone Pipeline? Am I really a part of a movement, a conversation, an effort decades long in trying to assess the state of environmental education? That's another hat I wear with the NEAC, the National Environmental Education Advisory Council. That's 11 people writing a brief on the state of environmental education and the prognosis for the future. Well, I consider the last three decades a failure, and I have had some tremendous individual successes and witnessed many, many. But in terms of the collective impact on our society and our elected officials and the credibility of science, this is starting to become pretty obvious to me that we're not succeeding. And I don't know how to get all the good people I know to pull out of the microscope and the work we're doing and feeding our little success stories, because we have to, otherwise we will die, and really think at a planetary boundary level, and what will it take to turn this ship a little sooner? We are making nudges, we definitely are, but we're not turning a ship. When we can't even visualize the future we're creating for this humankind and this biodiversity, it troubles me that good people are continuing to do tremendous things, but the collective impact of the people who will make the decision to turn this ship doesn't seem to pan out. So my question is something I've voiced before. I consider one of the biggest barriers to this collective impact being successful is the lack of credibility in science, especially in climate science, that is the opinion of the general public. And so my pressure now is really trying to see how we can really, on a very big scale, build public awareness of the credibility of the climate science and the tremendous consensus. And I think we have to think on very large scales like that. I was 12 people in the nation recognized as a climate resilience champion of change on April 11th. We were at the White House. The CEQ was all fussing over us and the White House. And we didn't get to see Obama. We were right outside the Oval Office, and Valerie Jarrett was being very gracious. And I gave her a hug, and she said, "I remember you." And I said, "Well, you know, Valerie, just let President Obama know that the level at which I become clinically depressed depends on his decision." And she giggled, and she said, "But I can't have you depressed, Caroline." And I said, "Well, it's getting close." I said, "The science is screaming at us, and we're still pretending we have choices here. And I will listen and take your input and hopefully, you know, learn a little bit from how some of you scholars think on this issue."
Well, Caroline, this is Tamara. I don't know that is the credibility of the science is the biggest barrier. I think that the social systems are a huge barrier. And even if people intellectually understand the science, changing the way we do business, the social aspects of it is a huge piece. And I think that it's not just bridging the gap between a scientific community and the people, but bridging the gap between all of the, you know, the social systems, the sociologists, the psychologists, bringing in these aspects of how do we address how people think about, I mean, we're asking people to change their lives. And I was just having a conversation earlier today about a lot of people, a lot of potential foundation funders, they want to give their money to do something that has an impact and causes change now. And they don't see education as something that happens now. They see that affects decision makers 20 years from now. And yet it's those young kids who are much more capable of changing the way we do business now, changing the social system, because they're not ingrained in how we do business now yet. So I think that is another big piece that has to be brought to the puzzle, is how do we actually change the way we do business?
Yeah, the paradigm shift is crucial, but the economic engine, we environmentalists and scientists are not on the economic table. We don't even have a one voice in the true cost of coal and oil. I mean, this is the type of, I agree, systemic change we need, where we work the social systems, but we also make the arguments that are true economic apples to apples, because the economic incentive drives everything, the will to get the social system changed. But anyway, thank you for sharing that. That's a good point.
Any other comments?
Yeah, this is Kristen, just to kind of jump on that. This is interesting to just hear about this. We've been we're kind of in the midst right now of developing a grant for our state funding sources that we have here through a trust fund. And one of the big things that we've been trying to figure out is this whole, what you're talking about, this behavior change piece that has to do with the social systems. And it's something I'm really interested in because I think, you know, we're figuring out ways of, like you're saying, of teaching this. And when, you know, just sort of back up to you, when you said you think it's a lack of the credibility of the science at a broad base level, I guess, I mean, we tend to look at things much more at a local level, and I think that bringing out those people that are your local experts that have some credibility already in a community is one piece of that puzzle when you're talking about that, not necessarily this big, huge, tall national level. And so bringing out those people that are already part of a community, and to go further with that with the behavior change piece, I'm really looking to think about this social scientists, what they're saying, how do we change these behaviors? I mean, is it getting peer groups more together? And, you know, we were talking about, you know, like the Weight Watchers point system even. But how do you get these groups of people that, because that's how people start changing, is when other people are changing around them too, when it's just the thing that you do and it becomes a part of the habit. And how do we do that part? And there's something in that, you know, that I think is whoever figures it out is going to change the world, I guess. But
I mean, if we're talking about reduction of carbon, the reduction of carbon is going to come from transportation and business. So you can educate the public all you want, but the public can't really respond until low carbon alternatives are available to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kristen, I think the on-the-ground efforts and having our people speak to the people, I mean, that's happening. I think that's happening the most of any, that and the K-12 fight to keep that climate science, you know, credible and all of that. That's gotten the most traction for me. I mean, the civic engagement we have going on here, because the scientists are coming out and speaking and we're having these formal and informal learning, that's happening, and it's awesome. What's not happening is the economic and the political will
mm-hmm.
to turn the ship and to incentivize these social system changes that have to happen. You know, we have, you know, we still have people who think that not being able to buy an incandescent light bulb is a crime against their liberty, you know. And so I do believe that the on-the-ground efforts are the things that give me the most hope. And I think without that, we're not going to get any kind of change. But to me, that's taking off. That's actually probably scaling. But from where I sit, it's scaling faster than the top can listen or respond. And it's because maybe all of these things matter, the economic engine, the social system changes and all of that. And I mean, I just defy, I have 80-year-old people here who want to go change themselves to the White House over the Keystone Pipeline because they finally understand the carbon cycle and they, I mean, they know it. I don't understand how the credibility of climate science is not a given with everything we know. And I was on a panel the other day with a meteorologist at the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce, and he was playing devil's advocate about journalists have to give equal time to each story. And we let him have it. And we said, you know, proportional, because if 99% of the scientists agree, then you give that other side 1% of the time on air. And we were having a good old time with him and some insurance adjusters and some business people and all of that. And no offense, Kristen and everybody, but I really don't know how to get to that decision-making top, the municipalities, the counties, the state, the elected officials, to really not just fuel, they are making decisions on economics and jobs by approving more fossil fuel. And what is it going to take for us, people working in the trenches here, to be elbow to elbow on the economic table about the true cost of fossil fuels? I mean, these scientists are scaring me. I create these Ask the Expert panels all the time, and I get a NOAA person and one of our geologists who's been studying this forever on elected officials. And the NOAA person is starting this by saying, we haven't begun to visualize the future we are creating. 160 degrees on a regular basis could be expected. And you're either going to be living in a dome or you're going to be dead. And you're looking at us, and I wrote about this in my whole White House blog, about they're going to talk about these future generations, about what are we doing? And so I kind of feel like a hamster on a wheel, scurrying around my life with all you wonderful people doing your own tremendous scurrying and life-changing things on a local or regional level. And I look up and I see the absence of the political will and the economic honesty or integrity to really own our obligation to science. We can't know what we know and do that. So I'm really maybe in the need of therapy to decide how much of this is really going to transfer itself into some meaningful change. But I think that's what we all want. And I'm seeing a lot of good change, but I'm not seeing the significant economic, social system, behavioral change that really has to happen sooner rather than later. We've been saying
so
for
how
the
would
past
you measure that impact, Carolyn? What would be your measurement?
That the elected officials understand the carbon game. And
Caroline,
yes.
This is Karen. I totally agree with what you and Kristen have said about projects at the local level and the kinds of efforts that people who are engaged in this are doing and the things that are being achieved. What I hear you say, though, when you're describing your frustrations, is the lack of action at the political level and not the science that I heard you start out with. So I want to ask the question of how you think political decisions can be changed, and then add that my own personal perspective from working on everything from nonprofits to direct lobbying myself over decades is that I think, like many commentaries have indicated across the country from many different people, that the political system is not working well because the moneyed interests have more clout than the common man's voice. And I would point to the 90% polling on gun control versus the votes in Congress on gun control as a prime recent example. And I think that's where action, more action is needed to address the political decision-making that you're calling for. And I don't see it as a direct scientist kind of thing. I see it as the majority of people that elect, that campaign for, and that expect their elected officials to represent them raising up and speaking out. And that's, my experience, that's how those kinds of decisions are changed.
Yes, I think you hit the nail on the head. My one connection that I can't seem to let go is that I think the political problem, or part of the political engine not turning, is that we are allowing some of these elected officials to deny science. And this is how they confuse the public, the investors, and so on. So I think that the whole idea of the integrity of science is compromised when we have these elected officials standing up and bald-facedly denying the credibility of the science. I mean, I've seen Lisa Jackson. I mean, you've seen her. No wonder the woman had to go. And so I think what you're saying is, yeah, I want to fix the political system. And I think the only real fix we're ever going to get is if we start getting the economic game down. And it's hard for the politicians on a 2- and 4-year cycle to worry about costs 50 years from now. But, you know,
and it's also hard for political elected officials to deny the public when enough people get involved and speak their
right.
piece.
And it's
that's what
more
I've
more
seen.
Yeah.
That's what I've seen changing these kinds of things over the decades that I've been involved in it. It takes many, many years for those of us who have been involved in grassroots organizing to get enough people engaged to change the outcome of elections and to change the decisions that elected officials make. But that's where I see that kind of change happening.
And so how come the 350.org, I'm running out of time and I've got to leave. I hate to leave this because I started it, but I'll listen to the tape. Are we looking at a point where we're out of time now to be tiptoeing around this and get this grassroots movement blown open? And why does 350.org and Jim Hansen and all these guys get tens of thousands of people at the White House and it gets little or no coverage? The no-fly zone over the Arkansas spill, what was that about? So, you know, these are, I have heard people refer to this as crimes against humanity in the most, you know, intense way. When you do this, when you deny the public the information and the access to, anyway, I'm going on and on. I think all of you, all of us need to keep our efforts going to build this grassroots thing and to help this political will, but I really urge those with the money or the access to the funders to start giving us the economic language so that we could be at the economic table on some of these things and not have that argument. It's the one that you just can't win. And they always bring that up.
What, that it's expensive?
That it's expensive, that, you know, we can get natural gas for so much cheaper than we could ever. Here we are in the Sunshine State, and our public utilities have a monopoly on solar. They have nobody can come into the state of Florida and build a solar industry. So we have talks out of both sides of our mouths on a lot of issues, and I think that the change I am looking for is I don't have the patience that it's going to take for me to see it, I think, and that's my frustration. And you all have been wonderful therapists today. I don't know if I have any answers, but, you know, it's. I know I'm in it with good people. I just don't know what strategic magic wand anybody can find for us to really turn that engine at the political level and the economic level and the social behavior level and all of it simultaneously. But I will keep trying.
Okay, well, we encourage you to do that.
I will listen. I hate to do this because I would like to hear it all, but I have an appointment.
Okay. Well, thanks, Caroline. So I think that we need to bring in all of the expertise in all of these different aspects in all of these different social areas, and yet I mean, identifying how to fund such efforts is another big challenge because you walk this fine line when you go for federal funding about advocacy. And while I think that that's where that line is has changed a bit by arguing, no, we're not telling people what to do, but addressing the issues not just from the pure science aspect of it, but to how it affects people's lives is another way to address it. However, it is a difficult issue when you're talking about going for federal funding. And maybe another way, and this is difficult, I know, is find other funding mechanisms. Some of you have avenues to state funding, but still, that it's usually very difficult. Foundation funding, is my understanding, is that kind of funding is mostly the companies want to be able to show impact fast. And this is a long-term problem. And maybe there does need. I mean, she talked about collective impact, and we need to define shared measures of success. And maybe some of those measures need to be shorter-term measures in addition to the longer-term measures. That may be one avenue. I mean, still defining what those measures are is difficult.
I think that, I mean, I think it's a monumental task, but I really think that that would be an interesting thing to at least talk about, what we would define those, you know, were. So at least we had anecdotally even able to say, you know, collectively this organization, this network of individuals has, blah, you know, trained X number of teachers on science-based climate resources, or, you know.
Yeah, but that's just one measure, and I think that.
Right, well, just an example of one of our measures, but we identify,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
It
might be worthwhile if we have a sort of develop an ongoing list of potential measures of success. That might be actually a useful exercise to go through. I could see where we could have one of our telecons where we sort of brainstorm that, put it on a Google document, have people kind of think about it over a period of weeks and come back and sort of see what, you know, see how things evolve. Because, I mean, I know another issue to address in this collective impact kind of space is that in order to have those kinds of measures, you need to identify a common agenda in which everybody can see where they can contribute. And so some of those measures have to address what you're doing. I'm not saying you suggested this, Kristen, but if we were to have only one or two measures and one of them was about how many teachers did you teach about climate change, and you have you have an organization that puts solar panels on roofs, well, then maybe your measure, you contributed zero. Well, you know, that so the measures have to be broad enough so that everybody who is involved, and you really do want to get as many stakeholders from as many different disciplines, sectors, whatever, however you want to refer to it, where they can see that they are contributing to some piece of these measures of success.
This is Karen, Tamara, and I like what you're saying, and I totally agree with what you've said about federal grants. I have seen more use of the word citizenship lately and decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm heartened by that. The project that I'm currently working on, which is a professional development group, I spent considerable time reaching out to and involving social studies teachers who have leadership positions in the National Council for the Social Studies. They're releasing their standards, their goal is this summer, their new standards. And I think that's one of the components of this whole puzzle that we would do well to include, and maybe that's a future discussion on one of our calls, is what does that piece bring to the table, and what does it look like from the social studies education perspective?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be an interesting...
Yeah, this is Jason at Bird Polar. We've found two things that tie into that. We've had a lot of middle school teachers that we've been working on some materials with and some Audio United Nations stuff say that, it's obvious when you think about it, is the geography, geology, kind of science and social sciences merges really well at that grade level. And speaking about the impact of climate change related to individuals also speaks volumes. And on our tours, we've been trying to stress a lot of the research's impact on the ground, especially in less developed countries. And there's a lot of people that it draws in that conversation and with questions that it speaks to a different audience. It's not, when you start talking about the impacts on people, it becomes less about data and more about the narrative, the human narrative. And that's, it's able to bridge a divide that I think some people wouldn't be as engaged if you didn't explicitly bring out those components of their research.
So what was it? What was the expertise of these these people, or could you say that again?
Well, we have one of our research groups here is Glacier Environmental Change, and it connects closely with our work with Ice Core Paleoclimatology. And what they're doing is they're looking at the impact on people downstream with meltwater. We're also working with some projects in Tanzania that deal with kind of education related to the change of ice on the mountain. And some of that's related to social impact, like you don't have ice in a place that's very prominent that has an impact on the way people think, but also they're noticing weather patterns changing there and precipitation changing. So we're trying to articulate that instead of just talking about the science and what the researchers are doing. We're very deliberately bringing in, here's the impact on people we've been working with for 20 years, that people know and interact with. Here's how it's affecting their families, agricultural crops that they're growing in these highlands. And we've had a filmmaker follow us with one of those expeditions and capture all that. And that speaks to a much different audience, but people, they feel it in the heart a bit more and not just in the head. And that's why it's speaking to that audience. That, you know, I don't think overwhelming data, there's a lot of the research with communication isn't working, but I think some of those people, it maybe hasn't appealed to their heart yet.
Mm-hmm.
We found a lot of success with it recently and connecting it to the social sciences. So I would advocate for both of those things that have been mentioned earlier.
Good. Have other people had some experiences with involving the social sciences in their work? No, I guess not many on the phone. But I think it would be a good avenue to explore it, relatively soon, because I think it is a challenge for everybody. I mean, usually in this environment of going for grants and science education, you need to, you know, solicitations are pretty narrowly focused. But being able to talk about social impact to enable bringing in those pieces might be very worthwhile.
No, I absolutely agree. We get a high number. I mean, the teachers that come to our institute are over half not science teachers. So we do get a lot of language arts and social studies. And then, of course, the elementary, you know, we start at fourth, fifth grade.
Do you follow up with them at all and see, you know, in what way do they use the information that you provided them?
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of them use, I mean, we have a lot of focus, you know, just on the outdoor of making observations and journaling and that piece. So some of them are just using that. But a lot of them are also going more into talking about the issue itself. We have our citizen science curriculum focuses on equity and climate negotiations and on understanding other solutions, you know, like what is geoengineering if it's proposed as a solution. And so we have a lot of social studies teachers that are using that also as getting into that climate negotiations and how do we do this part. And so yes.
That's great.
There was a great Andrew Revkin had a piece this weekend that got into the social sciences and its role that people should check out in Dot Earth blog. I thought it was a nice piece.
Well, actually, I have a question that kind of builds on this a little bit, but is related to basically Caroline's first concern. Is it one of the sessions that we've proposed for the AGU meeting and actually proposed it as a union session? And for those of you that don't know what that means, is that AGU has lots of different sections, very disciplinary. There's atmospheric science, there's hydrology, and then there's education sessions, and that's most of where our climate literacy sessions are housed. A union session is intended to cross-cut all of those. And so it's very powerful if you could. They don't allow very many of them, but the session title is The Role of the AGU Scientific Community in Addressing This Issue. And so Frank Niepold and I, along with Michael Mann and Ed Maybach, are going to convene this session. But it'd be good to get if anybody has comments of either who you think would be a good speaker for such a session or how should we pose it. Basically, by being a union session, we have a larger access to scientific community. Now, keep in mind there, this is a meeting with 23,000 people attend. And most of them are scientists. So, I don't think that we want to get into the nitty-gritty of what words you should use here and there, but at a bigger level that AGU scientists, so I don't know, I'd be interested in everybody's thoughts on this as we sort of think about how we might organize this session.
I think one thing that scientists lack sometimes is the ability to integrate the various sciences. I had a negative experience up at UCSD yesterday when the Sustainable Solutions Institute that was installed to address things like climate, the integration process didn't really work very well. So I wonder if...
Integration in what way? Between the different disciplines or something else?
Interdisciplinary integration with the social sciences. And I think that a formula for that could be very helpful. Or some examples where it's been...
So you said interdisciplinary with the social sciences?
Interdisciplinary with physical sciences and social sciences in the university.
Okay.
For instance, communication and ocean acidific, people that are working on different aspects of the effects of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a lot of pushback I heard at UCSD among the scientists to be exposed that way. So I consider that to be a real roadblock.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ice example that was given just a couple minutes ago is a nice example. That was scientific.
Mm-hmm.
The scientific
right.
research at its core.
Yeah.
Not to play on the word core too much.
Yeah, well, it's clear to me that, it's good to give examples, but you also want to give examples that not only affect a particular community, but the community that has some relevance to the person you're communicating with. Okay, any other thoughts or comments?
I've just arrived at the press office of Fortune Green, and I got to get off the phone, but I'll be following up by email, and I'll be on next week, okay?
All right, very good. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, next week we will have these first of the sequence of the social media sessions. Martha, who just got off the phone, will be participating in that, along with Emily Kelleher from a series at the University of Colorado Boulder, and Ellen Klicka and Maureen Moses from American Meteorological Society. Ellen is from the policy part of AMS, and Maureen is from the education part of AMS. So we're trying to bridge these different kinds of communities in this conversation.
Tamara, this is Ellen. I've been lurking on the call. Just wanted to let you know I was here.
Okay, good. I'm glad you've been on. Okay, well, if there are no more comments now or any other thoughts, then we will end the call for today, and I look forward to talking to everybody next week.
Thanks.
That's great. Thanks to everyone.
Thank you very much.